This is
implicitly
awkward.
Cue the music. All right, welcome back to Implicitly Awkward, everybody. I'm one of your hosts, Marcus.
I'm your other host, Alexia.
We have a very special episode lined up for you today. But before we start, just want to say rest in peace to everybody we lost at Asheville World over the weekend. It's a terrible situation. And we hope that everything can be made right and soon in a way that makes a lot of sense for everybody. But that being said, Alexia, would you like to introduce our guest?
Yes, definitely. So our special guest today is Obi.
Hi.
So Obi is actually my partner. And what's so amazing about him and so cool is that he is in the STEM and tech field. So to kind of give the folks a little background, how did you like first start out knowing that, you know, you're kind of good at math and science growing up?
My background, so both my parents are Nigerian, and I was born in the States. And if you know anything about Nigerian parents, they heavily emphasize education and career. So for me growing up, it was, you know, you get good grades and like that's what you're supposed to do. And because of that, I kind of just gravitated towards math and science. And that's what I started noticing that I was good at through middle school and then through high school. And then eventually, you know, I had to figure out what I was going to do for college. And since I was in Atlanta at the time, Georgia Tech is one of the best schools for engineering and math and science. So that's where I ended up going, kind of just because I was kind of going with the flow and going with what I was good at, but not so much because I knew that my passion lied with engineering.
That's super interesting. I know you've like told me this off air, but you didn't apply to that many schools.
No. I think mostly because like I was super lazy as a high schooler, and I didn't have like a strong interest to, I guess I just didn't really know what I was trying to do. And I was like, let me apply to Georgia Tech because like that's the best at what I'm currently good at. And then let me apply to a couple other schools in state because that's all I can really afford. And I was kind of lucky that my parents emphasized that I wanted to keep my college debt to a minimum. So in-state was really the only option for me.
So getting into engineering and tech, recognize that that can be a very, very, what's the word? Isolating space for someone who isn't white. So can you talk about that experience and like what that was like for you being in school for all that?
Yeah. I think cause like, I went to a Catholic school and most of the classes I was in had like mostly white folks. Like every now and again, you know, there'd be another Nigerian or another black person in my classes, but I was kind of conditioned to just know that, hey, there's not going to be too many folks that look like me. And then when I went to Georgia Tech, it was more of the same pretty much. So I think because early on I was like used to it. It was something that still, I was like, damn, like I wish there were more black folks that were learning the same things as I was, but, I was kind of conditioned to like know how to deal with it. But I will say, you know, those rare occurrences where you would run into somebody that looked like you that was in your class, like I was a breath of fresh air, you know, like a lot of my close, lifelong friends that I met, at Georgia Tech were also other black folks who are in STEM. So that was, you know, I think we all kind of like hyped up and helped each other kind of get through that program because it was a tough one.
That's amazing. So did you ever have like moments like feeling like an outsider, or did you really just like be able to find community in regards to like all of you being into, you know, STEM or engineering?
I think, I guess my answer is a little bit all over the place, but because my parents kind of made me believe that like I was good enough, you know, to excel in math and science, I never really had an inferiority complex when it came to like knowing that I would graduate, knowing that I would succeed. But when I did kind of shift my focus from engineering to what I currently do now, like software development, that I really felt like kind of a wave of like intimidation, a wave of like, I don't really know if I belong here. Because for context, I decided to be a mechanical engineer when I went to Georgia Tech. And I was just kind of going along for the ride, not really knowing what I would do with my career, but figuring it out as I would go. And my calling card was like, let me just make sure I have the best grades I can possible. And hopefully I can find a job, have, you know, a decent, stable career and achieve this American dream that everybody's been selling me. And so after my freshman and sophomore year, I had like, you know, really good grades, but I couldn't get any type of internship. And internships at Georgia Tech were huge because, you know, that's how kind of folks got their feet set and decided where they would want to take their career. But the big reason I wasn't getting any internships is because I couldn't explain why I wanted to work anywhere. Because I didn't care. I didn't really care about what I was doing at the time. And 3.5 years into my college career, I was like, okay, I kind of have to figure this out. Otherwise, I would have wasted my money or I'm going to end up being miserable doing something. Luckily, early on, I was able to land internships. And that kind of made me like wake up to the fact that like, hey, mechanical engineering is a good, stable career, but it seems like the path to level up within this space isn't as like rosy and like vertical as I thought it was. It seems like very slow and methodical. And like, I don't know how I'm supposed to achieve this American dream that y'all have been selling me, you know, working at the same company for 20 years and really not increasing my skills or really not even increasing like my salary along the way too. And I think a big wake up call for me was the second internship I did. I worked at a power company in Florida, and them trying to kind of hype up working there full time. They were explaining how like, oh, if you develop a patent for the company, then we give you like, you know, a $5,000 raise and you get a plaque. And I'm like, yo, $5,000 is nothing to what's it called?
To throw away.
Yeah, this is nothing to throw away. It's something to be proud of. But you developed a whole entire patent for this massive company. And for them, that $5,000 is like pennies.
Yeah, you got to know your worth.
Right. So I'm thinking like some of these folks have been in the lab for like 5 years at a time, you know, grinding on like these crazy electrical systems, and they just have a plaque to show for it. And that's when I was like, nah, I can't. There's no way. Like, there's no way I'm going to, you know, put myself through that. So that's when after that internship is when I really started to try and figure, I guess, kind of like a way out or an alternative path. And I started trying to think about what I was passionate about. And at the time it was fitness, as we had started a fitness club at Georgia Tech, but I didn't really know how to apply that. Cause I was like, I don't want to be a trainer. I don't want to open a gym. I don't really see many examples of like folks looking like me and being like super successful doing those things. So on a whim, I took a startup class at Georgia Tech, and in that class, they kind of opened my eyes to what it looked like to start your own business or do something for yourself outside of the traditional path that was, rolled out for you with school. I don't remember what y'all originally asked me, but that's kind of how I deviated from, my initial path, going to Georgia Tech.
Regardless of what we said, that was a good answer. A, B, like, for 5 G's, develop a whole patent for somebody else, or just do it for yourself. You know what I'm saying? Like, cause it's crazy how like, if, like you have one skill and you let the good folks know that you have a skill, they'll try to like use that and use it and abuse it until you, and you'll have nothing to show for it. So I'm glad you said no, because that's crazy.
I almost feel sometimes that like, whether it's intentionally or unintentionally, the way some of these like career or like industries are set up, maybe so much the way like school is set up, they don't really open your eyes to like a non-traditional route or non-traditional path. And you just kind of feel like you have to go somewhere. First of all, you feel like you have to get a degree. And then you also feel like you have to go somewhere and like work at this job for 10, 15, 20 years. And then, you know, just hope you achieve this American dream. And for a lot of folks, that's possible. It takes a long time, but for, you know, because of that, like, it's harder to follow whatever passions that you have. So that kind of like made me really try and readjust the way I thought about things and shift where my career was headed.
Mm-hmm. And so I kind of want to like speak about, because I know you pretty well, and I know your culture really has a lot of like influence on who you are as a person and how you move through the world, and also why you decided to go into engineering. And I heard you speak a lot about the American dream. And I know we've talked about this before, but for you, like, did you ever feel as if maybe you were going to let your parents down if you didn't follow this linear path with mechanical engineering?
Yeah. I think for a long time, I guess when I had made that shift in my mentality after my second internship at that power company, I kind of knew and was dead set on, hey, I want to start a fitness startup. I was working on one with my friend at the time. And we had charted out kind of a whole idea and a whole path to how we were going to make money and everything. But I was really nervous to kind of reveal that to my parents and kind of let them know that this is the thing I'm prioritizing. Because I think, you know, the model that they, the only model that they knew to success in America was through education and through a stable job. So for me to say like, hey, I've been, you put me through a private school and worked like crazy to do it. And then, you know, I went to Georgia Tech and I got into this, you know, competitive school, and now I'm not going to do the thing that like y'all immigrated here for and like, you know, supported along the way. So it took some like, one, I had to like prove that I had a plan. And then two, like I had to also kind of like make them aware that this is a path that even if you don't make it doing a tech startup, you have many opportunities outside of like the business that you're starting. And I think for me, like having the support of my parents helped out a lot when it came to them being like, hey, we're going to get off your ass about not taking, you know, that job at the power company in Florida and deciding to kind of, you know, be broke for 3 years and work on a startup, because we understand that you have a plan. And even if that plan fails, you have a backup plan.
Yeah. You have really valuable skills that you've learned along the way. And I think you said something really beautiful too, that like your parents instilled in you that you were smart enough, that you were like worthy of these things, that like you, well, right. It's like you're either engineer, a lawyer, or a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
So like that ideology, like that belief, I think is so strong in regards to like pushing someone through, because I feel like in America, a lot of the times, at least like in my experience, like I didn't see that many like Latina lawyers or things like that, you know? And I feel like when your parents kind of show you that, or you see things like that, then it really helps for you to be like, yeah, I am good at math, or yeah, I am good at like whatever subject it is, and I can be that. So that's like something that I thought was really beautiful that you said.
Yeah. And just adding to that real quick, I think, again, I feel like I'm very blessed and lucky that I was, you know, born into a family that like valued education, and I was born, you know, a Nigerian, because there's so many examples for me as of other Nigerians that are like crushing it. And I, you know, not everybody can say that. So like, I'm definitely very privileged and lucky to have that.
Shout out to our MVP Giannis. You know what I'm saying? He might be the Greek freak, but he's very Nigerian. Let's not get it twisted. It's a whole different story for a whole different, but yeah. But yeah, it's crazy because I have a lot of friends who are children of immigrants, and I've heard very similar stories about like engineer, doctor, or lawyer, pick one. And if you don't, what the hell? What are you doing? You know? So it's not my experience, but it seems like a universal experience for children of immigrants, from what I've seen at least. What do y'all think?
So if the listeners don't know, we're both children of immigrants. I'm child on my mom's side. My mom immigrated from El Salvador. Yeah, it's a lot of pressure sometimes, you know. I feel very much like I have to do things like excellent and like perfect and like take every opportunity because, you know, my mom went through a lot to like be where we are today. And I don't want to like ever have that in vain. And I also like, yeah, I want to just make sure that I utilize every opportunity. I can't just like let it go or be lazy about it.
Yeah, 100%. There's definitely like a, I feel like a survival mentality when it comes going through your career too. Even if, whether it's you're working for a company or like you're doing your own thing, there's this feeling of like, exactly what Alexia says, like you have to capitalize on every single opportunity. And, you know, kind of like telling my story a little bit more. When I started my startup after I graduated, it was me and my best friend, Keith. And
shout out
to Keith. And we both did, you know, Keith is also a child of immigrant, you know, his dad was Nigerian. And we both were like, listen, now's like the time. We're both young. If we want to try and see if this startup has legs and we can do something with it, like now's the time. But the obstacle and challenge for us is that, like, you know, we're broke because we just graduated college and we didn't know how to code, but we were doing a technical startup. So the mentality of like, you know, we have to survive, we have to learn how to code, we have to build this startup, we have to do it in time before we run out of food, basically. I think that helped us both grow. And so now, you know, both of us are full-time software engineers. And I don't know if that would have happened if we didn't have the urgency that we did when we were working on our startup.
You know, shout out to Keith and shout out to personal growth. Because look at you now. There's enough food. Right.
We went to Trader Joe's last week. So yeah, we sucked up the fridge for sure. So during that whole like transition period, or also, you know, while in engineering school, like was there any like key mentors, or did like mentorship play a key role in kind of like helping you?
Yeah. Reflect on my story, and I think I've been very blessed and very lucky to just run into the right people and be around the right people. As much as I kind of have a feeling about, you know, traditional education, going to Georgia Tech opened me up to have a lot of these different connections that I have, and mentors, and having good mentors is definitely something that came from going to Georgia Tech. So my biggest mentor is also like my business partner, Daniel Ye. He went to Georgia Tech. I hit him up way back when I was a sophomore there, because he helped us out with the fitness club that we had over there. And he's been a mentor for me up until this day. The startup program that we were in at Georgia Tech, we had a ton of mentors there. Mm-hmm. One of them was Keith McGregor. He was the first person that told Keith and I, like, bro, you bros can code. Like, you guys are smart enough to do this. And at the time, we were trying to find like people to pay to build our app for us. But when he was like, you guys can do this, we were like, shit, yeah, I guess we can do this. The internet is a massive mentor, because there's like nothing but other people in your same, like the internet is nothing but other people in your same position that are also teaching themselves how to do things and hyping up each other, big upping each other, helping each other find solutions to things. That was a godsend. I mean, I don't know how I would have learned how to code without the internet.
Yeah, because you taught yourself how to code.
Yeah.
Like, did you ever take any like formal classes?
I took, so because I was a mechanical engineer, there were some classes where you got exposure to coding, but when it comes to like the type of coding I did now, that I had to figure out alongside Keith. And I would say we were each other's mentors as well, because having someone that's at the same position in life as you are with the same goal that you have, that really makes it easy to keep going, because there'd be days that you wouldn't feel like,
very true,
you would feel a certain type of way, you know, there'd be this, I feel a certain type of way, but we both knew that we were in it together.
That's awesome.
very true. In my personal experience, a lot of my mentors and the people who I've considered mentors have been really good about helping me learn how to code switch in the necessary situations. How is code switching affected your journey, and how necessary you found it?
Yeah, I would definitely say it depends on like who I'm talking to. like
there it is.
Yeah, I think the most difficult thing for me early on was that like I didn't have a lot of like the words to use to like prove that I knew I could do whatever job or task that you wanted me to do as a software engineer, because I didn't go the traditional route and because I had to teach myself how to code. I was just kind of doing shit, but not really like knowing how to explain it. So over time, like, you know, talking with more software engineers, like being able to kind of code switch and explain things to somebody differently than how I'd explain it to my homie Keith, that paid dividends, especially now that my career is more focused on doing work for other people as opposed to myself.
So for people that don't know about like coding and like the opportunities for coding, especially let's say someone doesn't want to take the traditional route with, you know, going to university, etc., can you just like give a little snapshot on like the coding world and the possibility there, especially with like minorities and things like that?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of untapped opportunity when it comes to coding for, especially for minorities. And I think the biggest reason is because to make a decent hourly rate wage or to make a decent salary, you don't have to go to a four-year institution to learn. It does help. I'm not going to lie and say like, you know, going to Georgia Tech didn't help me have the confidence, and having Nigerian parents and all these things didn't help me have the confidence to sit down and learn how to code. But I mean, the internet is like, there's so much shit on the internet. There's YouTube, so much stuff on the internet. Awesome. That makes it more accessible to learn how to do this stuff. So for somebody that is kind of like is really thinking about it, I think the advice that I would give is you can go multiple routes. You can sit down and teach yourself, or you can do coding boot camps. So they have different companies and different organizations do them, but these coding boot camps are usually between like 12 and 16 weeks. And they basically teach you the fundamentals of whatever avenue you're thinking about going down for coding, whether it be mobile development or web development or backend development. And they cost about, you know, I think some cost like $5,000, some might cost like $10,000, you know, compared to a four-year degree, which might cost you $200,000-$300,000 by the time you're done with it. That can be a big money saver, especially when you look at the upside of what you can make as a software developer. But you know, after you get done with those boot camps, so the work doesn't really stop there. And so the advice that I give to other people and that people have given me is, if you have a desire to make a career as a software developer, having a great portfolio is super important. And after you kind of get a good understanding of those fundamentals, I would try and immediately work on something that you're passionate about, any type of project, because you're more likely to continue learning and continue trying to figure stuff out when you're maybe building a personal website, maybe working on some app for some idea that you had. Even if that doesn't take off and you don't make money from it, you're likelier to complete that and finish it and learn what you need to learn to get that next job so you can start making some money.
Do you mind just giving like a range so people kind of understand, like, if let's say this boot camp costs like $5,000 or $10,000, is it worth it, you know, for the like hourly or like salary that you could potentially make as a coder?
I would say it depends. Excuse me. I think it depends on the boot camp. Some boot camps are better than others, so you definitely want to do your research. Usually when folks go to boot camps, I haven't been to one, so you know, do your research and verify if what I'm saying is true or not. But usually when folks complete boot camps, the first job that they get is kind of like an entry level junior software developer job, or they work as a contractor for somebody. And I've been contracting for the last 4 years, and I like it because you don't, at a lot of these tech companies, there's a lot more barriers in the way. That if you didn't go to school as a software engineer, it makes it difficult to get through these abstract, like hyper technical interviews, mm-hmm. that don't really reflect what you do day to day. So getting a contracting job or getting a freelance job gives you an opportunity to make probably between 40 to $90 an hour. And, you know, you get to learn a lot of different stuff because you're working on different contracts here and there.
So there's money to be made, but you got to invest in yourself to do so.
Yeah.
And there's ample like opportunity, because you tend to get like people hitting you up on LinkedIn and different ways to do different projects. So I, from what you say, because I'm not in the field of coding or STEM or anything like that, but it just seems like there's so much opportunity and like good pay that BIPOC people, you know, if you're listening, you might want to think about it.
Yeah. And the last thing I'll add too, to the, while we're talking about salary, even if you want something more stable, like, you know, working for a big tech company or even a small tech company, I just 2 years ago, I learned like what you can actually make, like working at Google, and it blew my damn mind. I had like, just go on websites like levels.fyi, I think, or even on Glassdoor to see what some of these software engineers are making at these big tech companies. Mm-hmm. And it's like, nobody really tells you that like that's a possibility. But once you know that, and if that's something that you care to do, then you can start kind of setting up your career trajectory to achieve that goal.
Makes sense. Yeah, because they make bank. More bank than you expect. Let's put it that way.
it's and, you know, money's not everything. And I think everybody is different. You know, for me personally, I'm still trying to decide if I want to go the big tech company route. But for folks who, you know, they might have multiple people to support or things that they want to achieve, just knowing that that's like a career path that you don't need to have a four-year degree to get to, I think that's important.
Yeah, super important. Like that really levels the playing field in a way of like you not having to go to university or things like that. I think that that's like an equitable access point, you know, that you can kind of just be like, yeah, I can take this and there's ample opportunity and I get paid well. Like you got to hustle, but at the same time, like I think that that's a really great opportunity. But I guess shifting gears into entrepreneurship. So you have a company called Fit Genie, and that was what you were coding and creating with Keith.
Yeah.
Shout out to Keith.
Shout out to Keith. Great. Also, yes. Yeah. We had dinner with him and his girlfriend. Uh-huh. Yeah. Wonderful. I like him a lot.
Yeah. Keith's the homie. I guess after we graduated, we started working on Fit Genie, which is shout out to the merch right here.
You see it. You see
the merch.
Yeah, Alexi's wearing the merch for people listening. But it's basically a nutrition app. And now we're kind of going into healthy meal delivery. Because I've been doing contract work side by side with this, my contract work has kind of taken more of my focus. And Fit Genie is definitely a passion project because that's like literally where I cut my teeth. So it's something that, you know, we still continue and that I'm still passionate about. And I thankfully, I still have time to do. So, yeah.
It's available in the App Store, everybody. So please check it out. But also like if, let's say someone's not, you know, into tech or coding or anything like that, but like, I feel like entrepreneurship and like starting your own thing and what you talked about, American dream. I feel like doing that, having that like mindset or like the guts to do that, I feel like, you know, there's a lot of people out there that probably have ideas that like want to do something. Like what would be some words of advice in like starting your own thing?
It's really important to have a co-founder. I think you don't have to have one to start your own thing, but it helps because there's going to be times where you're not going to want to continue. There might be times where you're having trouble figuring something out based on like your skill set and your knowledge, and just having someone else who is along for the ride with you. And like, it's like super actually like really down, because there's some co-founders that just kind of want to like, you know, frou-frou about and not, and they just want the equity, and like when it pops off, then they want to come back in and be like, yo, like I was here when you were shooting the gym. But like to actually have a co-founder that is kind of in a similar position as you, you know, and they are both also as hungry as you are, that's both important for the success of your startup. And then two, if you're looking to raise money, a lot of people would rather invest in startups that have more than one co-founder than a startup that has a single co-founder because of all the reasons I mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to say that like you definitely in your journey, when I was talking to you during the pandemic and I was like, oh, I want to do this thing, you know, AKA implicitly awkward, your story and like kind of the things that you said to me really made me like, Marcus, let's do this thing, you know? And I don't know if many people know that, but I also want to like, you know, give you your flowers too, because the way that you talk about, you know, your own venture and like inspiring people to really just go for it, like, you know, that's a big deal. You really like helped me. So I just want other people to like listen to that advice, because a lot of times I felt like, oh, I can't do this, I can't do that. But hearing you and seeing you do what you do is very inspirational and like has helped us, you know, where we're at.
Definitely has. So thanks, man. We appreciate you.
Hey, I appreciate y'all. I mean, wow, that was really sweet. I appreciate y'all.
No, but yeah. But it's true, because I remember the conversations that we would have. We were like outside in the backyard and I was telling you about these things and you were very like supportive and gave great advice.
You know, for everybody who's listening, he's blushing right now. So
that's crazy. I'm like, anyway, yeah. I'm at a loss for words, because like, of course I've seen, you know, y'all do your thing from, I guess from this room since we live together, but I've been seeing y'all do,
live from this room.
I've been seeing y'all do your thing for some time, for like over a year now, really. Yeah. And I mean, I'm always tell you how proud I am of you, but like, I am very proud of you. I'm proud of you too, Marcus. Like y'all have been doing this thing, and it's hard to kind of start your own thing from scratch and keep it going and be consistent about it. And y'all have both been crushing it. So proud of y'all.
Yeah. I just feel like spaces like this where, you know, well, y'all are Black, but I'm Latina, and like that community of like safe space and like inspiring one another, you know, and just seeing people succeed, especially marginalized groups, like it's very inspirational. And it like
sure does.
Yeah, Marcus, go ahead.
Oh, I was just agreeing with you. It's like having, creating space and creating community to see people like who look like you or like have similar stories to you, like seeing that space and seeing people succeed in that, it means a lot. So I'll just agree with what you were saying. It's a beautiful thing, man. So I'm glad that even if you didn't know you had an influence on like how this is going, like you definitely have. So once again, we appreciate you and your counsel, and for all the things that you just randomly helped us out with over the past year. There's a lot of random stuff, we can talk about it later, but can we play a game? It's a fun little game called Let Me Put You On. And so for our listeners back home, if there's a movie, book, album, TV show that's been speaking to you, you got to put us all on, right? So let me put y'all on. I watched this show on Netflix called Inside Job. It's animated and it's based around any and all conspiracy theories. And it's comedy, but it's like, they make it so that all the conspiracies are real and they're run by one company. It's really, really funny. Like, I don't know if y'all are into conspiracies and all that, but like anything that you've seen a joke about, it's probably like in the pilot or like the first three episodes. So check that out. If you want something light to laugh at, but also if you really think about it, it's really messed up. That's my steeze. So Inside Job on Netflix. That shit great.
That sounds 100% up my alley. Yeah, I'm trying to watch that.
Yeah, check that out then. Let me know what you think. But yeah, what you got? Put us on.
You're gonna have to go first.
Okay. So I have two things, but I'm gonna start with like a fun fact, and I hope Obi is down with me sharing this. But we like to watch The Bachelorette. We do. It's very good. The drama is hilarious sometimes. The characters on there. So if you have never watched The Bachelor or Bachelorette, you should check it out. This season, we really like Michelle. She's a great woman. We really hope she finds love. She's amazing. So I'm going to put you onto that. And then also we watched The Harder They Fall on Netflix. That was really good. I liked it a lot. The music was amazing. The acting was great. I mean, it was great. So definitely check it out.
Before you go, was Michelle on the last season of The Bachelor?
So she was on Matt James's season. She like got to the final two. She's absolutely like gorgeous, beautiful human. She's a teacher.
Okay.
She's from Minnesota. Her. Like okay. She's a good, I hope I say this and she is, but like, I just get great vibes. And like, we both want her to find love.
I can't even lie. When Alexis first started watching The Bachelor and The Bachelorette, I was like, man, what is this? Like,
yeah.
I would kind of like, you know, peek between my phone and my laptop, whatever's in front of me. Yep. I'm all in on it now. I can't, I can't even lie. It's the way they design it, the way they kind of tell like the stories, you know that they're like playing a game with you, but you can't stop participating in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're rooting for Nate. He's Nigerian. I think he's biracial, but he is Nigerian.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Everybody Nigerian I'm rooting for on The Bachelor.
What is it? What's that saying about Niger never finished last?
Niger no, they carry last. Basically, like, we don't, everything's first place. That's the mentality.
You got anything?
The only thing I can think of off the top of my head is I've been listening to the new Injury Reserve album By the Time I Get to Phoenix. So if you're into like kind of like industrial, like a little bit like wonky like hip hop, talks about stuff like climate change and like technology and dealing with friends passing and things like that. It's like kind of a really ethereal album, but I like it a lot.
True indeed. Absolutely. Well, that's our show. Once again, thank you. If you made it this far, thank you for listening. Before we wrap, you want to plug your app one more time?
Yeah, sure. The app is called Fit Genie, FITGENIE. You can find it on the App Store, the Play Store, and we have a website too, fitgenieapp.com.
Instagram.
Fitgenieapp on Instagram.
Beautiful. And if you don't already, follow us on Instagram at Implicitly Awkward. Follow us on Twitter at Implicitly Awk. That's Implicitly AWK. Twitter, give us more characters, please, for the username. And it's neither here nor there. That's all.
And that was Implicitly Awkward.